Okay, very briefly, Ali Mosley's best bets again, just before we get Adam Pengilly on. So she loves In the Derby Sharp and Smart. That's race 9, number 1. Race 9, number 1, Sharp and Smart. Tal Brigar in the New Haven Park Country Championships final. Race 5, number 4. She likes race 4, number 3, Sequestered in the Adrian Knox and in the Chairman's. Race 3, number 12, Normandy Bridge, a value play. $21 the win, $6 the place with Tab. And at Musselbrook today, she likes race 1, number 2, Rhythm is a Dancer, $4.60. And race 7, number 8, Iter, $19 to win, $5 the place. And that's in the Musselbrook Cup. And those will all be up on Bet's Friends on the Tab app. And Adam Pengilly is joining us from the City Boarding Herald. Good morning, Adam.
Morning, Jared. Morning, boys, and happy Friday.
Indeed. Let's recap the footy last night. 28-20, the Roosters over the Eels. And the big talking point out of the game, I guess, was the hit on James Tedesco and him going off with an HIA after just 20 minutes or so. Bailey Simonson went to the sin bin. How did you see it?
Yeah, at first glance, Jared, I must say I thought Bailey Simonson was lucky to stay on the field when I watched it the first time. And then the more you watch the replay, and Trent Robinson made this point in the post-game press conference last night, he was ropeable at the time, but then he calmed down and watched the replay after the game, and he thought, oh, I'm not 100% sure if that really was a send-off offence. So he was a little bit sitting on the fence there. Obviously, the match review committee will deal with that a little bit later today. If they deem there was contact made to the head and it was forceful, then Bailey Simonson could be sitting on the sidelines for a few weeks with that charge. But I feel sorry for James Tedesco. And guys, I don't know if you remember back to a couple of years ago. It was an eerily similar incident to that concussion, that heavy concussion he suffered against Parramatta, the same team, at Combank Stadium a couple of years ago, which pretty much spawned the Magic Rounds crackdown the week after. So similar sort of play, same team playing against. And obviously with the new concussion guidelines, James Tedesco won't play against the Storm next week for the Roosters. That's a massive loss for them heading down to Melbourne. Just on the game itself, the Roosters were always in control of that game, weren't they? They took advantage of the Eels being down to 12 men twice in the first half, a Will Pennicini's professional foul, and then Bailey Simonson's high shot, and they scored late in both times of those 10-minute blocks. And I think Parramatta can still take a fair bit out of that game, scoring a couple of tries late. They kept fighting to the end, and I know they've only won one game and lost four from their first five rounds, but I don't think they're in as bad a spot as what the ladder says. And with a draw coming up in the next sort of 4 or 5 weeks with games against teams like the Tigers, the Bulldogs, the Broncos, Knights, and then the Gold Coast Titans, there's an opportunity there for them to win a few games and try and get their season back on track. So I know Brad Arthur's not hitting the panic button yet, and I think the Eels can still make their way into the top eight at some stage later this year.
Yeah, I think that's the key, Adam. The fact that their run over the next couple of weeks, if they win those games, everything will be okay. But the problem is when you drop games and then you're chasing your tail a little bit, if you don't get those games you're expected to win, then you can drop right out the back. So that'll be a major watch in the next couple of weeks. But I actually thought they tried hard, Parramatta. They're just not executing as well as some of the other teams. And the Roosters, on the other hand, they're not playing their best football, but they're finding ways to win. And I thought coming out of trouble last night, they did it easy. But when they got in good ball, they were sort of a bit frantic with their plays. But they were able to break Parramatta down. And in the end, they came away with, you know, even though it was only an 8-point victory, I still thought they were the dominant team. But one of the biggest stories of the week, other than Joseph Swali'i, has been Jack Whiten's decision to go and test himself on the open market.
Is
that a surprise?
Up, how are you holding up? Are you okay?
Mate, I'm okay, actually, because I don't think the Raiders are losing. No, I think he's fine with the Raiders.
Have you spoken to him?
No.
Not yet?
No. Okay. No. I wouldn't speak to anyone about their
contract
situation.
Mate, you speak
situation.
To your son about where he's going to play, surely.
Oh, no, I want him to start the Raiders, and I think he will. I'd be, I don't know, 80% confident.
I'd be surprised if he leaves, and you know him obviously probably better than most. He just seems like that sort of guy that suits the Canberra lifestyle with his family living on his property just on the outskirts of Canberra there and enjoying everything that comes with living in a town that's a little bit quieter and not as bustling as a place like Sydney or Brisbane. But it certainly caught a lot of people by surprise earlier this week. And I've actually got a story in the Herald today speaking to Latrell Mitchell saying he'd love him to come to South Sydney and play with the Rabbitohs. Now, they've obviously got issues with the salary cap there. It's probably a little bit unrealistic to think that. But we do know how close he is to Latrell and Cody Walker and those sort of guys. And whether he can command top dollar and probably have to play in the centres, given that Cody Walker's already 5'8 at South Sydney, obviously it's highly unlikely it'll happen. But Yeah, it definitely caught me by surprise earlier this week. I know Wayne Bennett's going to still be sniffing around for a marquee at some stage and get a player that's going to be being paid $1 million on his books that could slot into the halves there. So, I don't know. I tend to agree with you, Loz. I think Jack will probably stay at the Raiders. And I know a lot of people said it's his last big contract. He's got every chance to test the open market. But I also agree with what Ricky Stewart said yesterday. That club has stood by Jack in a lot of really trying circumstances over many, many years. So does he still owe them? Does he still owe them the chance to finish his career there as a Raider and a one-club player?
And what's he worth, though? I'm like, his talk is on 800 or 900 grand now. What's he worth?
Yeah, it's a good question, like, Clarkie.
Like, you're only worth what someone will pay, but I think you're saying, and Loz is saying, you think he's going to stay at the Raiders, but where do they go? Do they go to $1 million, an extra 100 grand? Do the Dolphins or the Tigers, do they go, are they willing to pay him 1.2, 1.3 on a three-year deal?
Yeah,
it's a lot of money.
It is. But we've got to change the way we think about the salary cap because of the new salary cap, right? We talk about in the old days, oh, geez, if you're a $1 million player, you've got to be doing X, Y, Z. Well, the salary cap's gone up significantly this year to 11.4, 11.5. So naturally, guys at the top end of the market are going to be getting paid a little bit more. So whether the Dolphins think he's worth that amount of money to pay 1.1, 1.2 potentially to get him up to Brisbane, if that's the route they want to pursue, that's a call for them. So I wouldn't be surprised to see the Raiders, if they do re-sign him on a contract that's worth seven figures. And that's purely just because of what he's worth to the Raiders, but also the fact the salary cap has risen for the next 5 years. So our top earners are going to be earning. There's going to be a lot more guys in that $1 million club per season now than what there was, say, two or three years ago.
What did you make of the West Tigers reaching out to Mitchell Pearce, the phone call between Benji and Mitch?
Bizarre, Loz, isn't it? I must admit, I didn't see this one coming. And you can just see that Tim Sheens and Benji are desperate to try and get an experienced half on the books to steer them around the park. And it says that they're not completely sold on Luke Brooks. Loz, what do you do if you're the Tigers with Luke Brooks? Like, he's still there. He's still trying his best. But they're obviously trying. They're throwing the bait out to try and get several players, like Cameron Munster, a Mitchell Moses, now a Mitchell Pearce. Luke Brooks is still off contract at the moment as it stands. I'd imagine they're going to have to make a call on his future in the next month, probably to 6 weeks. Like, where do they go now? I'm of the belief that they just probably need to part ways and give Luke a chance for a fresh start somewhere else.
Yeah, he's a good player, Luke Brooks, but obviously he's not the player, the controlling halfback that the West Tigers are after or the West Tigers need, hence the reason why they've chased Mitchell. And again, you know, I'm unsure of where Luke's best position is. I know in that West Tigers system, it's definitely not seven. I think he could make a good running six. I agree with Clarkie. I think he'd make a great number nine. But would he be prepared to move into that position now, so late in his career? But I think he's got all the attributes of a wonderful number nine, but he's got the ability with his versatility also to come off the interchange bench and be that good 14 for a club. But the big issue, I suppose, that Luke's going to face is, what's he on, $1 million?
Yeah, this year he is, yeah.
What's someone going to pay him at the end of the year? Like, it's going to drop significantly.
Yes.
In fact, mate, you're talking at least half his wage is going to go.
Yeah. He would have to, I'd imagine he's going to have to re-sign for another club and probably going to, he's going to have to halve his wage. He's going to have to halve his wage to get another gig somewhere else unless something dramatic happens in the next few months. And you talk about potentially making a fist of hooker Laws. Well, he's not going to do that at the Tigers with Appy Corrissy out there. No. He's going to have to look for another club, obviously. So, I don't know. I can understand why Tim Sheens and Benji want to try and get a controlling half. Is Mitchell Pearce the right person? What is he, 33, 34? I haven't been following the Super League that closely, but it appears like he's missed several games to start the year with a calf problem. So his body, he has always looked after his body, Mitchell, I think, relatively well. But he's getting to that age now where injury is going to start catching up with him a little bit more. So I think Pearce's put a stop to it pretty quickly, saying he's quite happy over there in the Super League playing with Catalan.
And the other thing with Mitch too, Adam, I don't know whether he'd want to come back into the spotlight of the NRL.
Yeah, that's right, Loss. Yeah, I think he enjoyed getting out of the fishbowl of the NRL where there was so much spotlight on him and so much pressure to go to the south of France. And I know it's a cliche, but he can just live his life a lot easier over there, can't he?
Who are you betting on?
Oh, what a deep program this is, Jared, having a look at it last night. It is a tough program. I'm just trying to find a couple of value plays there tomorrow at Randwick. In the TJ Smith Stakes, I want to be with Private Eye, race 7, number 3, Private Eye. I thought he was really good in the Newmarket first up. I know he was beaten by Inseeker, but I think there was a case to say you could make. He was on the wrong part of the track. It was only his first up run. He's going to improve into his second up run here. I'll just go back to his runs at the back end of last preparation. He was so great in Sydney in the Everest. And obviously we saw what he did down in Melbourne prior to that. And I just think it's his time. I think we've got a real changing of the guard in our sprinting ranks at the moment. At the price, from the nice gate, I want to have something on him. And in the Doncaster, well, if he gets a run, race 8, number 21, Ossipenko, has to appeal to me. We know that Chris Waller loves the Doncaster. He loves winning the race with 3-year-olds. He's got 49 kilos from an inside gate, an in-form rider. In a race where there could be 6 or 7 winners legitimately, I think he's the value in the race, Ossipenko, at that double figures, and happy to have something on him. So the two value plays at Randwick tomorrow are race 7, number 3, Private Eye, and race 8, number 21, Ossipenko in the Doncaster.
And Ossipenko's in with Kerwin's Lane coming out. So there you go.
Beautiful.
$14 at the moment. Mate, you have a great day and a good weekend.
Yeah, enjoy the weekend.
Phil Boss, good morning to you.
Good morning, Mido. How are you going?
Yeah, really well, thanks, mate. A sad week in Australian football, though. The death of Manfred Schaefer. Tell us a bit about what he meant to Australian football.
A hell of a lot. Very sad week. It's one of those you're sort of caught in two minds, whether to be overly sad or really concentrate on celebrating what was a wonderful life and a wonderful contribution to his adopted country in the end. And, he had a profound impact on me personally and a lot of people that I know. I trained under him for about 12 weeks when I was a youngster, late teens, 17, 18. And in a lot of ways, it's figures like Manfred Schaefer that really shaped your whole career and your mindset around getting to the professional level and even as a coach, because he was not just a wonderful player, but a coach and mentor to many. So, hard as nails on the pitch, hard as nails in the technical area, but one of the softest human beings you'll meet. So he knew when to flick that switch. So he'll be sadly missed. And condolences on behalf of Football Coaches Australia and everyone that I know in football to the family, of course.
Yeah, well said, Mossy. With the Socceroos, they went down to Ecuador 2-1, but overall, both nations won a game each. What were some of the good things to come out of it and some of the areas that still need improving for the Socceroos?
Well, Loz, we won the series. We won the series on goal difference, as Arnie claimed after the second game. But no, look, that's tongue-in-cheek. But it was a wonderful exercise for us, for the Socceroos, because it really gave Arnie a chance to blood some youngsters, and we know who caught the headlines in the likes of Alexander Robertson, Aidan O'Neill, Quall getting his first goal. Aaron Kunda didn't get off the bench, so he doesn't become the youngest Socceroo of all time, which I think was a smart move. And also Brendan Rodgers from Leicester really praised Arnie and the coaching staff for sending Harry home, Harry Suter, that is, back to England early so he could get ready for a massive EPL relegation clash this weekend. But What I thought was really interesting for the Socceroos was this renewed confidence in winning the ball back. If you look at the first game in Sydney and particularly the first half in Melbourne, our attitude to win the ball back in transition, so if we cough it up, this really aggressive mentality to counter-press and win the ball back as quickly as possible, I thought was fantastic. On the flip side of that, I think Ecuador showed that we've still got a way to go physically. I think they monstered us in the second half when they really found the second wind and they came home with the wet sail and physically they just monstered us in that second half. And of course, there was a lot of younger kids on the pitch in the second half, only made a lot of substitutions. But I think it was a great exercise in firstly showing Australia the way the Socceroos are going to play over the next 3.5 years. And secondly, that we've got this renewed confidence in playing with a free spirit, which I think is really exciting.
Now, Mossy, I saw this during the week. Goalkeepers, a rule change is coming, which I'm guessing will forever be known, at least here in Australia, as the grey wiggle rule. So a rule change is coming in July, banning keepers from unfairly distracting the penalty taker so they can't touch the frame end or net before their opponent shoots. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, but can you still do the Wiggles jumping technique?
No.
He's not touching anything.
No.
No distraction. He's going to stand there.
Because that'll come under unfairly distracting. I mean, which is extremely subjective. Oh, mate. I mean, how ridiculous. Come this is overkill, on. Surely, by FIFA.
It's a batter's game.
Another
give me a
break. By FIFA. What a shock. Or is it FIFA?
Well, I think the precedent's already been set. Like, goalkeepers at the moment aren't supposed to move off the line. And by the letter of the law, before the ball's struck, right? By the letter of the law, if you slow down Andrew Redmayne's save against Peru to get us the World Cup, he was off the line before the ball was struck.
Yeah.
So, you know, these rules are brought in. And like everything, when there's a change in a rule, the pendulum will go ridiculously to the other side, and then it'll start to settle somewhere in the middle where it's realistic. But yeah, look, it's a shame because it brings some real theatre to penalty shootouts, and the pressure's already on the striker, so I can understand some of the thinking behind it. But yeah, well, the less we talk about it, the better, I reckon. It's just one of those pedantic rules that I think will be thrown in the waste paper bin in no time when it comes down to the referee's perception.
Yeah, what about in the A-League, buddy, this weekend? Big game for Sydney FC. Need to get a win back, don't they? Get some momentum.
Yeah, they do, Clarkey. You know, the derby is still leaving a bit of taste in the mouths of everyone at Sydney FC and their supporters. Thrashed by Western Sydney. Western United come to town. Great chance for Sydney FC to really get back in the winner's circle, and they need to. Lafondre is back. Ryan Grant celebrates his 300th game. What a professional that guy is. What a club man. He defines what it is to be a Sydney FC player. So congratulations to Rhino and all his family. It's a wonderful milestone and fully deserved by one of the best blokes you'll ever meet in professional sport of any code, and forever known as the Mullet as well. So it should be a big night there. And Sydney FC women play Newcastle on Sunday for a chance to win their third consecutive premiership in a row. And it's just remarkable. Ante Juric, the coach, and all these players. I'm convinced that guy, Ante Juric, is destined to coach the Matildas one day. Done a brilliant job there. So if they get the win against Newcastle, they get the treble, which would be brilliant. But tonight it all kicks off, Clarkey, with Western Sydney Wanderers hosting Adelaide. This is a blockbuster. This is a fantastic game of football. 2v3, Adelaide in second, Western Sydney in third. Both teams playing with huge confidence. So I reckon it'll be an absolute rip-snorter out there at Combank.
10:30 tomorrow night, Manchester City against Liverpool.
Oh, my goodness, Mido. Are you staying up for this one?
Just getting in.
Look, there's two TVCs in regards to tomorrow.
Well, actually, Clarky, it'll be an old man's time for Mido getting in at that time because it's the early kickoff, 10:30. So this is brilliant. This is going to be a fantastic game, although probably the headline, Man City is 60% win probability. The draw is 22%. Liverpool only 18%. But both teams struggling with injuries. Nunes and Henderson are amongst the doubtful for Liverpool. And Foden is definitely out for Man City. He underwent appendix surgery last weekend while he was away with the England team. And Haaland, a massive doubt. Did not train with Manchester City yesterday with that groin injury that kept him out of the Norway internationals. So, look, the game could go either way with those types of players potentially missing. You know, it gives me more confidence. I think Haaland for Man City is a goes without saying, 42 goals to his name in all competitions this season. Massive, massive loss. And I think Liverpool can probably cover their losses better than Man City can cover that one, particularly with Foden out. They won't have a number one striker.
Give us a multi.
Well, I've got a couple. Let's go A-League first. Four-legger in the A-League. Western Sydney into the Mariners to beat Brisbane. Into Sydney FC to get over Western United. Into Perth to beat MacArthur at Macedonia Park. So four-legger there. Western Sydney, Mariners, Sydney FC and Perth.
That's paying $13.80. What else have you got?
Ooh, tasty. And then the EPL, Brighton to beat Brentford at home. Arsenal to beat Leeds at home. Chelsea to beat Villa at home, and West Ham to beat Southampton at home.
Love it, Mossy. And again, for our listeners, we'll have that on Bet's Friends on the Tab app. You have a great weekend, mate.
Good on you guys. You too.
28-20 last night. The Roosters beating Parramatta at Allianz Stadium. Luke Keary scored a double. They led 16-2 at the break. The Roosters, Will Penasidi, Bailey Simonson ended up in the sin bin. James Tedesco failed his HIA after just 20-odd minutes in the game last night. And he's set to miss next week as well. Blockers coming up after 8 o'clock this morning. And we'll go through what we saw last night and look ahead to the rest of round five. In the AFL, it was a 14-point victory for the Western Bulldogs against the Brizzy Lions there. Jamara Ugle-Hagan, 5 goals for the Dogs. The multi is open, Loz, and we're here trackside at Royal Randwick this morning. Beautiful day. And tomorrow, what a day in prospect. And I'll tell you what, if you can go back-to-back on day one of the championships with the multi, Loz, you will have the chest a long way out.
I'm coming in with a bit of form behind me. So this is what we're going to do tomorrow. We're going to go race 3, number 9, Gin Martini to run top 4. And then in the sires, English sires, we're going to go race 6, number 8, Cafe Millennium to run top 4 also. And if you want to be a part of that multi, that is paying, I believe, $9.
$9, tab app, tab website, click on sport and today's offers. Just a couple of shout-outs on the text line. Good luck to the Cooma Connections, who own I've Been Trying in tomorrow's country championship final. A massive thrill for a small town and for up-and-coming trainer Matty Kelly. Yes, good luck to all involved there and all the connections involved in the New Haven Park country championship final tomorrow. Quick shout-out, guys, to the Sydney First Grade Cricket Final, Sydney Uni against Parramatta. 3-day fixture at Sydney Olympic Park. No love lost between the two sides with a healthy rivalry. Jimmy Craddock sending that one through. And we're going to talk some more cricket shortly. But just firstly, the Sargood Foundation is a community-based organisation which initiated the concept of and raised the funds for the world-first Sargood on Collaroy, a purpose-built accessible facility for those living with spinal cord injury. A visit to Sargood is so much more than respite. It is life-transforming and creates new futures and opportunities for those who live with the trauma of spinal cord injury, both the individual and their families. And this Monday at Longreef Golf Club there on the Northern Beaches, a luncheon, a charity golf day is being held to raise much-needed funds for the foundation. And joining us is Longreef member and ambassador for the day, Australian cricketer Mitchell Starc. Mitch, a very good morning to you.
Hello, team. Good morning. How are we all?
Yeah, really well, thanks, and appreciate your time on our show this morning. Why did you feel, I guess, the need to support this charity day and this charity, the Sargood Foundation in particular, Mitch?
Yeah, obviously being members at Longreef, Elisa and I, for a few years now, we've been to a couple of these days and been fortunate enough to get down to the facility there of Sargood down at Collaroy and have a look around and see the, you know, the joy on the faces of people that spend some time there and the experiences they get to have while they spend some time at Sargood and for the families as well. So, you know, it's a great day down there at Longreef where we're approached by Steve and Poppy Twig, who are members there as well, and we've played a lot of golf with, and with the idea of sort of being ambassadors or hosts of the day as well. And so hopefully this weekend is a nice weekend on the website with the silent auction on a lot of items, which you can go and have a look at helpinghand.com.au. And then obviously the day on Monday, we'll have a golf day, have a nice lunch and hopefully raise some more money for such a great cause.
Okay, helpinghand.com.au to get involved in that silent auction for the Sargood Foundation. As you mentioned, your local course, yourself and Alyssa, I can only imagine how competitive it gets between you.
Yeah, look, it's we've both come back off tour and straight on the golf course, and it's the competition's been, I guess the quality's not been great the first week back, but it's still healthy.
Morning, Starkey. Thanks for your time, buddy. Tell us about India, mate. Mixed feelings, test series versus one day series. And how's the finger back bowling? How did that feel for you, mate?
Yeah, it's I guess an interesting one. It was, you know, obviously the back end was really successful. We had a good test win, but to miss out on the test series is always disappointing, and particularly over in India, where it's a really tough place to go and win. And we thought we'd put ourselves in some really good positions to win that series. So disappointing with the tests, really successful in the one days to finish off the Australian cricket summer with a good away one day series win as well. So mixed feelings is probably spot on. It was a nice way to finish. In terms of the body, it's fine. It's pulled up well through the summer, the finger's going to be a bit interesting for a while, I think. But I think all in all, it came out pretty well, and a lot of good things came out of that tour.
Yeah, how do you see the summer, Starkey? Because I think if you look at results, it's been very successful. But I think you look at a number of the teams around the world at the moment, the most, the hardest part is winning away from home. And it's probably been like that for a while as well. Do you judge, you know, that loss in India harshly? Do you think you had the right team? Do you think you had it, you know, an experienced enough team to win over there? Or do you look back at the summer and say, you know what, it's been a really good year of cricket for us?
Yeah, look, I think it's hard not to look at it and say it was really successful for the group on a whole. Yeah. Obviously, winning at home's, you know, something that we pride ourselves on and making that really hard for opposition. And as you said, going away, I think a lot of teams at the moment winning away from home is the hardest thing and the pinnacle as well, because we know our conditions have changed over a long time as well. So at the same time, I think if we look back on our three subcontinent tours in the last 18 months, we've had three Asian Test match wins, a couple of draws, and you know, we had a series win in Pakistan, unfortunate tie in Sri Lanka, and then had a test match win in India, but obviously came up short. So I think based on our Asian performances in the last 18 months, I think it's been quite successful. We haven't obviously had the series win in India to cap it all off, but I think as a team moving forward and you know, learning and adapting to play in Asian conditions, I think it's been a lot of really good stuff come out of those three tours.
Yeah, Mitch, there was a lot of talk about the prep leading into that Indian series, but what does the prep look like in the build-up to the Ashes and also the World Test Championship?
Yeah, it's going to look different for everyone, really. Obviously, we've got a group of guys going to the IPL, which starts, geez, I think, tonight, actually. and then a few guys, I believe, going over to county cricket. And then for a few of us, it'll be, you know, rest and rehab for the next couple of weeks to get ready for a massive, massive period of cricket. So for me personally, it's I've got 3 weeks to switch off from bowling. It'll be pretty much straight back in the gym next week. But bowling-wise, get 3 weeks off and then gear up with probably a 4 or 5 week lead into England. So six test matches in 8 weeks is going to be very busy. But obviously, the preparation is going to look different for wherever guys are in the world leading up to that tour.
Yeah. How does that look, Starkey, in regards to prep? Before that Test Championship, do you play a tour game? And then after the Test Championship, is there any tour games before that first Ashes Test match?
Honestly, couldn't tell you. I haven't looked. And I haven't got that information. So, mate.
Three weeks, vacay. Talk to me in three weeks.
Alicia and I sat there at Diggers last night looking at days we can play golf. So.
Fair enough, too.
Well, England, Mitch, they think they're the Harlem Globetrotters of cricket all of a sudden. They're the best team since the West Indies of the 80s. But how about Ollie Robinson, their fast bowler, who's been talking it up? Recently spoke about giving us a good hiding in the Ashes. Well, 2 days ago, he went on, he kept going. He said, the way we're playing cricket at the moment, we feel like we can really stick one on them and win the series comfortably. What's your response to Ollie Robinson?
Is he fit yet? Can he bowl many overs?
I didn't say that.
Eat another pie.
This is where you give it the old, well, my cousin's brother, he reckons Ollie Robinson can shush.
But gee, they've got some confidence about them, don't they, Mitch?
Yeah, they do. And I mean, rightly so, they're playing a really aggressive form of cricket and it's coming off for them. So, look, it's been interesting to watch from afar and they've done it now for a long time. So it's not a fluke. But no, it's going to be a good challenge for us. Obviously, going to England, generally you think of, you know, the Duke's ball moving around and at times seeming wickets. So, yeah, look, if that's the brand of cricket they're going to continue to play, I'm sure we can match fire with fire if need be, and we've certainly got a group of players that are confident to match up with England, and hopefully we can go one better than last time and you know, win the Ashes rather than retain it in England, which would be unbelievable as well.
from a bowling perspective, how much do you feel like you're going to have to adjust with the way England are playing? Because let's face it, it is unique. So the run rates they're scoring at, unprecedented in Test cricket over, you know, that length of time, the amount of overs they're batting for to make those runs as well.
Yeah, they're definitely pushing the game forward at a very fast rate. But, I mean, it's hard to see that way of cricket not being conditions-based. So if all of a sudden you get seaming wickets and a swinging ball and they're 5 for 50, are they going to keep swinging? I mean, we saw how flat the wickets were in Pakistan. And the fact they moved the game so quickly allowed them to play as aggressive as they wanted to and bowl a certain way as well. But, it's certainly an entertaining way to play Test cricket, and they're putting themselves into some really good positions with the bat purely at the rate they're scoring the runs. So, at the same time, if you know, conditions are nice for batting, I'm sure we've got a very, very good batting lineup that can match, not necessarily a score as quickly as they can, but we can certainly score the amount of runs. So it's going to be very interesting. We've got two evenly matched squads. It's going to be an entertaining series, and we've got 5 test matches, which is great too, because you can have a look over a long time.
Just bowl Ollie Robinson a few bounces for us, Willis.
I reckon Ollie's going to be the least of Australia's concerns.
My God. Well, Mitch, we appreciate your time this morning, and enjoy the day on Monday, particularly at Long Reef, your local club there, raising money for the Sargood Foundation as well. We appreciate your time again.
No, thanks for having me, guys, and hopefully it's a good day out there, aren't we?
Deliciously flaky pastry on top and bottom, which is rolled extra thin, a filling of 100% lean Aussie beef. I'm talking about Garlo's Pies, the only pies you should be putting on your plate, and Garlo's Pies are simply bursting with flavour. There's heaps of flavours to choose from. And here's a thought, take a night off from cooking, grab a Garlo's family pie for the whole crew. They're available in all Coles and Woolworths stores. Remember, we're located in the chilled meals section. If you can't find us, just ask for Garlo's Pies by name. Garlo's Pies, they're thin on pastry, they're big on meat. Brad Davison, good morning.
Morning, guys. How are we?
Very, very well. Great to be here at Randwick on a beautiful morning, and what a day it's going to be tomorrow. Let's look at these 4 Group 1s. Let's start with the English size, which is race 6 of 10 on the program. For the 2-year-olds, 1,400 metres. We got a pretty dominant favourite here in Cylinder. Are you with or against?
Yeah, I'm with him, guys. I think he's very, very hard to beat there in the size tomorrow. The Golden Slipper form's always generally the form for the size each and every year. And I think this year in particular, he's held the likes of Don Corleone across the line there comfortably, I thought. I think take away a freakish performance from Shinzo on the day in the slipper, and he's been the most consistent 2-year-old for mine this season. So I see no concerns at 1,400 metres. His mum won out to a mile. The way he races up on speed, I think he'll handle the 7 furlongs, no issue whatsoever. And while I've got a healthy respect for the likes of V8 and Brave Me down there in Melbourne, the level of competition that they've been racing against versus Cylinder is just chalk and cheese. It's as simple as that. He's been racing far better class of animal, and I think he'll get the job done. It reminds me a little bit of Microphone a few years back that ran a placing in the slipper and got the job done in the size, and I think this horse might even be a touch better. So Cylinder for me clearly on top in the size.
In our multi, Davo, I've put Cafe Millennium in to run top 4. Do you think he can?
Yeah, look, he's going to appreciate the extra trip, Loz. I would have liked him to trial a touch better leading in, but we know, on his day, what he did earlier, this preparation was simply scintillating. So he's going to appreciate 1,400 on a big track, and wouldn't surprise me at all to see him run on into the top 4 for sure.
How are you assessing the TJ Smith Stakes?
It's a great race, yeah. Look, I think you can poke a few holes in a few of them, though. I'm not with Nature Strip. I'm taking the stance that he's below his best now, so I'm happy to take him on. I'm also happy to take on In Secret. I think she's too short in the market. She was dynamic in the new market last time out, but that was a handicap down the straight at Flemington. And I think her best form's away from Randwick at Rose Hill and particularly at Flemington. So for me, I think she's drawn awkwardly, and I just think she's too short in the market. As a result, I'm leaning towards Private Eye. I thought he did enough there first up in the new market with the big weight back on the inside, the wrong place to be on the track. And second up last preparation. He beat Allbark gear kicking at Tab Everest. He meets him better at the weights this time, and I just thought he was the value in the race. Gear kick, I think he'll go very close. He's drawn perfectly for him. Sort of get to the middle of the track and be hard to hold out. His run was there for all to see first up, and he definitely looks the danger and deserving favourite. But for me, Private Eye on top in the TJ.
Okay, Private Eye the TJ, which is the first leg of the quaddy. The second leg is the start, Doncaster Miler. One of the better Doncasters I reckon you'll see, Dave-O. Who are you with?
Yeah, it's a cracking race. Absolute lottery in terms of trying to find the winner. It's very, very hard. I've gone with Communist. Look, he's drawn horribly, but I don't mind the three-year-olds this year. I mean, they get in so light. The lead-ups have been pretty good, and I think a horse like Communist around with Guineas winner, who you know wasn't far off some pretty good horses last time out as well. I'm happy to lean his way, but I wouldn't talk anyone out of anything in the Doncaster. It is that type of race where I think there's genuinely about 12 different hopes, and yeah, you'd be wanting to go wide in the quaddy in that leg, that's for sure.
What do you like in the Derby?
The Derby, I'm with Sharp and Smart, the New Zealand Derby winner. I just think he finds a way, and you know, he started at $1.40 in the New Zealand Derby, and look, it was tradesman-like, but I think he had a little bit up his sleeve, and I think we might see that on the weekend. So I think Pericles is the best horse in the race, but I don't think he's a stayer. We saw that in the Derby down south in the spring. I just think 2,000 metres might be his outer limit. So for me, I was happy enough to take him on and be with Sharp and Smart in the Derby tomorrow.
Who do you like before we get your best in the New Haven Park Country Championships final? What a race it's going to be, and a lot of excited connections texting in this morning as well.
Yeah, it should be a great race. Again, I think there's a few in the market that are a little bit too short. I thought the favourite to Brailgar was one I was happy enough to take on. I know he got the job done at 1,400 last time out, but it was a very soft 1,400 metres where they're going to go hard tomorrow, and I think you want a horse that's going to really appreciate even that little bit further. I've gone with the Aubrey Train Galloper, Bianco Villano. I really like the way this horse has been going since they've whacked the blinkers on a few starts ago. I think he draws perfectly to get into the running line and thunder down the middle of the track late in the piece. So I thought he was the one to beat. I thought Tessador Silence was also there as a great hope, but I was against Tabralgar and a few others there that in the market as well. But yeah, look, I think Akasawa is a good chance, but for me, Bianco Villano, I know he's been well back. I think he's also beaten the country championships.
What's your best on a tough day?
Yeah, race 6, number 1, Cylinder, guys. I think you'll get the job done. I think the $2.25 on offer as well is generous from the bookies. I've rated him more like a genuine $2 pop. So I think he's clearly the best of the day there tomorrow, race 6, number 1, Cylinder.
Yeah, tend to agree. Good on you, Dave. Have a great day.
You too, guys. Cheers.